Welcome back, everybody, to the Cave of Solitude, your pop culture and comic book podcast, coming to you from the megacity metropolis of Toronto. I'm your host, Eric Anthony, and I'm once again in the hallowed halls of Cyber City Comics, my home comic book shop, with the comic book owner who I've been going to visit for the last 20 plus years, Mr. Daryl Spears. How's it going, buddy?
I'm good. Wow, 20 years. That's crazy.
Since I was 14. So for people listening, we are sitting 6 feet apart because we are in person, face to face. We're doing the social distancing. So if we sound a little far from the mic because we're sharing it, that's the reason why. We'll do our best to balance out the sound. But 25 years that you've been in business. You were my 20th episode, one of my first interviews that I did 5 years ago.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, I remember that too.
Time flies, crazy. Man. And we were planning on this year having the banquet.
Yep.
And you had the whole thing worked out.
COVID has ruined the whole year.
Man, how has it been for you?
Conveniently, right when they decided, like, when things started getting bad in March, mm-hmm. We all think back to, like, you know, February, like, oh, a funny little virus over in China, and then how things just kind of, like, steamrolled. Mm-hmm. The week that Ford shut down Ontario, Diamond Comics decided to stop shipping books. So it coincided. He was like, you have to be closed on a Thursday, and Diamond's like, no more comics after this week. And then, like, they discussed it in May, the week Diamond's like, we're going to ship books again. It was the same week that Ontario's like, you can open now. So, a little blip where I kind of ran around hustling. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about earlier today, actually. Every day I'm hustling was my anthem. No joke. Every day I listened to it once, either on the way to work or on the way home.
Yeah.
Because working by myself, 8 to 10 hour days on the road, and the worry of COVID, and my family was chilling at home. Mm-hmm. So, I did all the shopping. So, it was kind of crazy. And so, that was my anthem.
I was so happy that you were able to get through it, because you hear that stores are shutting down, non-essential business, and you never know what's going to be okay and why not. You never know. So to see certain places in the neighborhood you're at, you hope they all stay.
Yeah.
And to know that you were able to stick through it, even though you had to, you know, some staff weren't here for a bit and it was just you. When was the last time it was just you working for the shop?
Oh, like pre-COVID? It was just solid me. It was about 25 years ago.
Right at the beginning.
Yeah, there was a point where I worked like every day, 10-hour days, 12-hour days.
That's crazy.
Before I got an employee.
So give us a history of the shop, of Cyber City Comics. Because 25 years is a big milestone. A lot of businesses don't stay in business for that long. And comic shops, you know, everyone says it's one of the hardest business to stay successful at. So bring us back to the beginning.
It really does start when I got a job at a comic store in a flea market. It's only open on weekends. And he had decided to get out of the business. And I thought it'd be kind of cool to, like, buy half of it. I don't know why. I don't know why we came to that decision. I'm like, hey, man. Well, so I lied. Let me go. I got on a job there. I'm jumping ahead. Part-time. And I worked there maybe for about a year. And then they said they're going to sell. And they have another guy looking into it. So I was like, hey, man, I'd be interested in going in halves with this guy. So me and this guy I never met became business partners in this flea market. It's my buddy Bruce. And he stayed with me for maybe a year. And then got out. I bought him out. And I ran for another 6 months on weekends while finishing high school. And then I got a loan from the government and went full-time.
How old are you?
When I first opened the store, I was 19, just turning 20.
That's awesome.
So the flea market store, I think I started when I was like 17, 18. So I have customers who I call OCs that are my flea market customers that have been with me for, it will be coming up on, we said 25 years. It'll be 26 and a half years.
Wow.
Come this Christmas.
That's dope.
Yeah. No, that's only 26 and a half. It'll be 27 years.
When did the shop open up at Dufferin and Steeles Plaza?
That was July 8th, 1995. That was when I changed the name. It used to be called Cyber City Comics and Collectibles. Mm-hmm. And then I changed it because Collectibles was too long to write out to Cyber City Comics. The next. And I copied 1 million comics straight up. I liked how that's how they spell comics. I'm like, that's awesome. I'm taking that. And yeah.
Less letters is always more attractive. I've been coming to Cyber City Comics since 98. 14 years old.
So we moved here then?
No, I was at the one at Dufferin.
Oh, okay, so now, yeah, because we moved here summer of 98 in July. Yeah. I was at that location for 3 years, and then we jumped here.
Okay.
And so, I remember because I wrote on my electrical box in the back room the month we moved in. So I'd always have a reminder in the future when we moved here.
Okay. I remember there being the arcade console. I remember kids going there just to play X-Men or Street Fighter. I forgot which one it was.
Four-player X-Men. We had that.
Yeah. And I remember buying, I think the first comic I bought there from you was Electric Blue Superman.
Oh, yeah.
That's when it first happened. And whatever change I could scrounge from my mom in the apartment, because I lived on the other side of those stores, it was just going to Superman. It weren't the best stories at the time, but it was a sweet spot to go to as a 14 years old. Perfect, right next to a comic book shop. I didn't think that I would be living across the street from the shop now, but wherever you go is where I'm going to move. That's what it seems like. What would you say is like the culture of your shop? Because a lot of times the shop takes on the personality and tastes of the owner in a way, right?
Yeah.
So what would you say is it for Cyber City?
A friendly, intelligent, open-minded group. It's an interesting variety. Like my highest number, if it was a profession, I can say it was my biggest customer base would be teachers. I know of at least 15 to 20 teachers that shop here on a regular basis. Now, these are regular people. So these are people I've been judging for my mainly weekly clientele. I have about 5 or 6 plumbers. Mm-hmm. I have 3 or 4 dentists, a bunch of doctors. But comics aren't for dumb people. My comic customers, very few of them are dumb. Because dumb people don't really read comics.
And people think dumb people read comics.
Exactly. But no, there's an art to, like, reading comics, you know? Some people just, like, oh, just pictures. But you have to have the imagination to kind of get that. And so I find toys is a different store. I'm saying toy collectors are dumb. And there are dumb comic guys. But I'm saying on average, people are always surprised that, oh, I have doctors and I have lawyers and I have all these other guys that read comics because it's something creative. It's a good release for them. And, you know, it just shows you also that guy who read comics as a geek in, like, high school could grow up to be something, you know, like... That's why I love the fact that Wu-Tang Clan like comic books. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, they all of them. Yeah. I think Method Man, recently I heard him on a Talib Kweli podcast where he said that it was his comfort as a kid growing up, and he's spent hundreds of thousands at this point on his collection, and he's actually... working out. Have you seen his Instagram page of him at the gym?
Yes, I have seen him working out. Not on Instagram, but yeah, I saw pics, man. He's getting like, yeah.
And they asked him, are you trying to train for a Marvel movie? And he was like, yeah. He goes, when they call me, if I get casted or if there's something out for a Marvel character, like, I'm ready. He wants, I think he's thinking of Bishop.
Ooh. Method Man loves you, Method Man, though.
I know.
I know.
Have you seen... Mike Del Mundo did a Method Man as Bishop.
No, seriously.
It was really dope. I'll check that out. Yeah, I was like, that's...
If I wasn't a Wu-Tang fan, my parents go watch this movie, they'll totally love it. It'll be awesome.
Yeah.
But if you really know Wu, I find it tough. Maybe I could be totally wrong. Maybe he'll kill the role. But I find it difficult, if I like you for another reason, to get into the role of you being something else. Especially being from, like, music... or sports, whatever it is, but I'm gonna try acting. You gotta be really, really good to pull that off.
Common's pulled it off surprisingly. He's gotten to a point where
he's gotten better. He's still Common to me.
Yeah,
in John Wick, I was like, hey, it's Common.
Yeah. Date night, I see Common.
It's same, and there's a thing with Will Smith and Steven Spielberg where they were talking, saying we should do a movie together, and Spielberg's like, you're bigger than my movies. It's Will Smith in whatever movie I directed because you're too well known. But Will Smith's had a couple old movies back in the day where he wasn't Will Smith. He he sold the role.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just always Will Smith to me.
It's hard to see him even for like in Ali. Like he probably did a very good job, but I see Will Smith too much.
Yep.
Which, yeah, it's true. I'm interested to see Jamie Foxx as Tyson. I think he's going to pull that off really well.
Jamie Foxx, if you would ask someone like years and years ago when he first kind of came out, because didn't he play some silly like in makeup, black girl, or like Jamie Foxx. Was he on Living Color? What show?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think he played like a Letitia or a Keisha like girl of like kind of a ghetto black girl, and that's my picture. That's Jamie Foxx. But then you look at him now, everything he's done. Like the guy can sing, the guy can act. Like, kudos to him. I like seeing when you look at people like LL Cool J. Mm. LL Cool J, I remember as like this skinny kid back in the day. Yeah. And who would have thought years and years later that this guy would like reinvent himself and get into acting and stuff. He's still LL to me. Yeah. But he's always been a likable guy. I'll watch him and be like, yeah, I like to see him.
Yeah, no, it's true. It'll be interesting to see Jamie pull that off. What do you think of Ice Cube as an actor? Do you think he's... I always see him the grimace. Like, yes, at some point, I need to see that.
The Disney movies, honestly. Yeah. But the problem with that is you can't put out albums being all gangster after you've done a bunch of Disney movies.
It's true.
But those were good. Whatever the one was where, like, he's...
Are We There Yet?
Yeah.
Is that Disney?
If not Disney, it's still a kid's movie. Yeah. I don't know if it's Disney, but my kids saw it. And my kids loved it. But I'm like, it's Ice Cube. But you know what? If he's older, who's he fooling? Like, you know.
No, it's true. He pulls it off well. It's nice to see the people transition.
Role. Yeah. You gotta know your role. Like certain people can kind of break out of it, but there's certain people you know are a particular way. So if they're super known, being super, super funny, they have to be either really good actor and kind of sell you on it. Like Truman Show for Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
That was his, like, I can act. You're like, holy crap. Like, yeah, this guy can do it.
It's still kind of weird to see him be a dramatic actor, but he's definitely super talented. Yeah. I'm surprised. I'll always be surprised when I really think about it is how big The Rock has gotten.
Yes.
As a Hollywood star, action. He is like the quintessential action star. Yeah. I don't know if he surpassed the people before him that we considered action stars, but I never thought I'd see past The Rock because he was huge as The Rock. Like, it was larger than life.
You remember when he became The Rock?
Yeah.
So I had just gotten back into wrestling.
Yeah. Nation of Domination.
Huge break. Yeah. So I came in right at the Rocky Sucks.
Yeah,
Rocky.
Yeah, yeah.
And he started doing the, like, the Rock looks and all that. And then started making Farouk be quiet. And then, like, Farouk would give him looks. And then, yeah, man. So I remember, like, Rocky, like, one, because I didn't know who he was. My buddy was a steady WWF back in the day watcher. And was just like, yeah, that's who he is. You know, I'm like, oh, cool. And then he progressed and then started doing his first movies. And he's a likable guy. He's likable. I watched Ballers, and he was dope. And Ballers is a great show. Pretty much just playing himself as an agent. So,
okay.
So they show clips of him playing football in university. And, like, that's the whole kind of, he's not The Rock, but, yeah. He's acting like he would be if he became a sports agent kind of guy.
There's not much he can't do.
You brought him and his family with COVID, eh?
I heard.
That's crazy.
It's scary.
Yeah.
I mean, it could get any, like, you would think of him the picture of health, right?
And he said they were trying to be safe, so you never know, man.
You never know. No, it's true. Getting back to the shop. We're going to do a lot of tangents here, folks, which is part of the fun. But getting back to the shop, what have you noticed have been some of the trends over the years that you've had to adapt to your store? Because, I mean, when you probably started selling comics, there weren't as much... How much of a trade market was there for trade paperbacks and omnibus and all that stuff?
Right now,
yeah.
And when I first opened, I had a 4-foot, 2-level bookcase shelving, kind of like a magazine rack you see in a convenience store.
Yeah.
Of trades, and that was it. And I had two of those, and now I have like so trades has like exploded. Trades were something, it was like a hardcover, like only certain things got collected back in the day. Now almost everything gets collected. That's gone up. Way more toys. Mm-hmm. Like, comic toys back in the day was like Toy Biz or Kenner. That was it. And it wasn't very often or very good. Now there's tons of toys. And then trends. I got in at the very start of when manga made the big... I don't remember. So you had like Hong Kong action movies kind of started coming out of North America slowly. And that kind of made an inroad. And then anime started getting big again. And then manga. So I started carrying straight Japanese manga to people that just wanted to get it. And then slowly started... I'd set up when I opened renting VHS tapes of anime. I had like 1,000... I had in my collection, I think I had 2,000 to 3,000 VHS tapes. That took up the whole back corner of my store, and behind the counter, we stored them all, my whole rental thing going, and it was big. And then I was going to switch over to DVDs, but then you had the internet. And once the internet hit, and you can get all that anime either bootlegged or from, like, Netflix, there was no point. And honestly, rental was the worst. I had to go to people's homes to, like, get tapes back. Because VHS tapes for anime were, like, $30 for three episodes. Some VHS tapes, my cost was $40. So if you rented three or four tapes, you'd get, like, a couple hundred dollars worth of value. And they just wouldn't return it. So, like, Blockbuster doesn't go to your house, but Cyber City does.
It's such a niche sort of thing where you would have, if you have that here, I mean, I don't remember getting anime rentals at a Blockbuster. So if you had them, it's a pretty sweet thing to have a place.
Remember Grey Region?
Yeah.
So that was, they were the Grey Legion back in the day. And they got sued by the Canadian Legion. Ugh. That changed their name from Legion to Region. It was two brothers.
Okay.
And I grew up in Mississauga, and my first comic shop was the Grey Region outside of Square One that then moved in there. And, Galaxy Comics or something now.
Planet X?
No, Planet X is the up north and elsewhere. Anyways, that's what he changed to. This guy Phil runs the place. Really nice guy. Anyways, that was my store. I went in there, bought my first long box, bought four copies of Punisher 1, one to read and three to put away, they told me. It paid off. That book's like a $40 book now, so I sold one out of my collection a little while ago because I can tell how I bagged and boarded my books when it's a Darrow original, right? Like, put it into the store, and that it did pay off.
That's good.
I don't know where I was going with that. Grey Region, name change, buying lots of books.
I think we were just talking about, like, trends.
Oh, yeah. So they came to me one time, like, tell us about manga and anime.
That's right.
And I started explaining to them, like, hey, man, this is what it is. And I see them at Anime North, and I'm like, hey, I'm the guy I kind of told you what to buy. And like, because, yeah, it was this weird point when Asia came over, and for young people that, you know, we had no internet, so there was no cool way to download stuff or hear about stuff. It had to be word of mouth or, like, the Toronto Film Festival Midnight Madness. Like, I used to take the subway down to Suspect Video, and they used to have, like, the Faces of Death videos where it was like see crazy deaths, like, from around the world, and sort of, again, no internet.
Yeah,
that was, like, big stuff. Like, oh, have you seen Faces of Death? And, like, it was this urban legend in high school of who could rent it, where you'd see it, and stuff. And just, yeah, it's weird. And then internet took that over, so it became this thing when anime and manga exploded. The internet just allowed people to, like, jump right into it.
Right.
The problem was, though, like Hong Kong films, they started importing everything. Oh, people like, you know, anime. Let's bring out, because there's bad anime. It's like there's bad American comics. Mm-hmm. There's bad Japanese comics and bad Japanese anime. Now, everything they make is amazing. So we got all of it. And yet they kind of sift through it, and they kind of, like I say, Hong Kong movies. I had a section of Hong Kong movies too got huge, but just too much of it came out where we started getting their garbage.
Right.
The next big thing that hasn't plummeted yet, because eventually that all died, then DVDs died, because then I started carrying DVDs, because then you had the internet. So, you know, I don't even know where to buy. I couldn't order you an anime DVD right now to sell to you because I have no supplier for it. It's literally kind of gone. I think you have to buy it directly from the company if you actually want a box set.
That's crazy. So thinking of the timeline, you pretty much launched the shop during the bust, I guess you could say. So it's like a crazy time for you to launch a comic shop. Everyone's like falling by the wayside.
Oh, sucked.
Yeah.
So I looked back. So people right now don't realize how good you have comic book prices. Now, what in retrospect pretty much means everyone got ripped off big time 20 years ago. Because no one ever challenged the cover price. If you ever look at old trades, it'll say like $20 American.
Yeah.
And it'll say like $40 Canadian.
It was crazy.
Just way off. Like right now, $20 American, and our exchange rate's around $28 Canadian.
Yeah.
On comics, there'd be $3 comics, that'd be almost $5. But because the exchange rate, now, the height of my exchange rate was $100 US, cost me 160 Canadian. That was the worst exchange. And that's when people started doing U.S. cover price wars. We're going to charge U.S. cover price. And, like, it was insane. Anyways, once we eventually hit par for, like, kind of a year or two, and we stood on par, everyone dropped down to par. So now the U.S. decided we're not going to put a Canadian cover price on the comics anymore. Stores have to do it. So you never, and some book companies still do. You'll see books in bookstores mm-hmm. where it's a really weird U.S. to Canadian exchange rate they throw on there. And it's because they overguess because they don't care. A book's publisher in the States doesn't care what the Canadian cover price is because they get paid in U.S. dollars.
Right.
So they could price it $20 American and $70 Canadian. And they don't give a crap because they're still selling at the $20 rates.
Right.
Except for the store to adjust it. So it looks good when it's overpriced and I can drop the price down because everyone likes to see that. Versus they price it too low and I have to raise the price. Right. Yeah, graphic novels in the last 25 years went from having very little to like bookcases. Way more toys because they started doing different toy licenses. But for trends right now and wondering when it would go bust are Pop Toys. Pop Toys has honestly probably saved a lot of comic book stores.
Yeah.
It's a good side avenue of like, I carry way too many of them, but there's just so many Pops. And if you know what you're doing with them, it's you can make some good money off of it.
Yeah.
What was like a sweet spot, you would say, in between the time that the shop's been around with, I guess, you having that diversity of things to that you can sell, but also just the quality of the books where people were, they were in for. Was it the time when the dollar was par because everyone was
easier? It was less work too.
Yeah.
Try to remember because Marvel's had like, there's been a couple years just judging by people's pull lists. I have one customer in particular even commented how, oh, I'm buying so much Marvel this kind of rotation and jump back to DC. But you've had cycles where. I can't remember what Marvel did during New 52.
They did all new.
Okay.
Right.
It all kind of blends.
Yeah.
All kind of blends. But there's been points where Marvel books are really, really stellar and DC sucks and mm-hmm. vice versa. And times where they're both putting out quality. Not necessarily all quality.
Right.
I think they both all put out too many comics. They kind of flood the markets, which just hurts themselves. Like Marvel's policy is put as much out as possible so all your dollars just went on Marvel books. That's why they do like 15 covers per book. They want you to buy all of them and have no money for DC books.
Right, right.
What was I going to say? A Glory Day? There was a few years back. So I'm trying to remember what House of X. When House of X came out,
that was last year.
No. House of M, sorry.
Oh, House of M, okay. Yes.
House of X is really good too, sorry. House of M came out, people were like on board, like tons of people. I want to get every single book. I want to really jump into it. And then Marvel put out so much crap. Every big storyline they did every year came less and less people. But there was a height where like different books. When Kingdom Come was coming out, when each issue came out, the amount of excitement that Wednesday, almost like when Three Jokers came out a couple weeks ago, that was my busiest Wednesday all year. It was crazy. But all because Three Jokers got people all up and like, oh, I want to go buy this book.
Right.
New 52 was huge.
Yeah.
That was a crazy time. I heard really well on that because stuff was returnable, so I heard extremely high and it paid off.
Well, that's good.
Because stores sold out and people started coming to me instead.
Right.
Rebirth was still good, but not as good. New 52 was like...
A good push.
Yeah, crazy. And that's when my kid was born, so I had to miss the start of it. Like, the week Justice League came out, Jim Lee was the...
Yeah.
I wasn't here that week. My kid was born the day before. I was gone that Wednesday, Thursday, so I didn't even get the first week of New 52 properly.
Well, I guess you could say that's a pretty good time. You have a kid born, the business is doing well, the comics industry, everyone's excited, I guess.
The one thing I'll say with COVID, it forced comic stores to reexamine how they spend their money.
Yeah.
So where I would be worried like, hey, less people are going to come by. So that's why I've changed my hours up, and now I'm kind of back to almost full normal hours.
Mm-hmm.
But you're worried my regulars want their books. How many casuals are going to come by?
Mm.
So there's certain books where I'm like, hey, these people aren't coming by anymore. Like, and also my number one customer stopped collecting comics. So that's $800 a week this guy would drop. That's not happening anymore. So with COVID and when Diamond took a break, it allowed me, with the government covering rent, to help out. That was, God bless them, to lower all my orders and readjust them. So now I'm trying to force a lot of people, like, listen, look how it trades now. If you want a hardcover, yeah, special order it. I'm not going to stock stuff that's just going to sit on a shelf
right.
and then sell for 40% off at a sale. I'd rather just special order it for people. Same with comics now. It hits a point where I'm like, I'm trying to sell out, especially DC, because it's extra money now to import DC books in. So if I can sell out of every book I order in, then you actually make money. You're not stuck with stuff.
Right.
So I want to get into that. There are tiers to people who are into comics, which I think makes it really tricky for people who own a shop, because you have your weekly readers who want to get that book as soon as it comes out, or your guys who collect a title monthly. They're in here every Wednesday, right? I've been one of those guys. And you got your collectors, the fear of missing out people who chase covers, and they hear a book is hot. They're the speculation, right? That's always going to be something, which is, I think, a good and a bad thing. Yeah. And then you've got your collection collectors, which is where I'm at now, where I want, you know, a big hardcover book or trades, and I want to read in chunks. How do you balance all of those?
See, I call those guys readers, but readers cover both.
Right.
So if you like trades, I usually are readers. There are limited trades you can get. So there are guys that collect the hardcovers that they know, like the IDW ones. Those jump into price when they do the artist editions.
Right.
So this is a site collecting for graphic novels. But in general, you just buy them because you want to read them. And I think they look better on a shelf.
Yeah.
Nice library.
That's where I'm at.
Yeah, it takes the value out. Who cares? Then there's guys that are pure just money. So you have guys that I only buy comics I don't read, and I put them away. Then there's the middle ground, where it's like, I buy them, I take care of them, I put them away, but it's kind of a little of both. My big guy I had lost, he just bought everything he didn't read. Like, and that's the worst. COVID has allowed me to start. I send out more emails now where, like, hey, have it on your pull list. Helps me do my orders. So I sent out a couple emails now with this thing called FOC, Final Order Cutoff, where people can go on a Diamond site and look at pictures of what's coming out and pre-order it. So my rule now is, if you haven't pre-ordered it, I can't guarantee I'll have it for you. So they do all these crazy second printings, third printings, and they're like, oh, order me one. It's like, but if you didn't order it properly. So a lot of guys now that have switched over to having pull lists and emailing me regularly, that makes it easy to do my orders. COVID's changed that a lot. Because I told you, I've cut back my orders. So if you don't tell me, I have to talk to two guys tomorrow. That, listen, you need to tell me. If you get Superman every month and you want two cover A's every month, tell me in advance. So I'll make sure when I do my orders, there's always two copies for you. And one guy this week, when I did his pulls from an email, I didn't have any left. I had to switch up other people and kind of rearrange stuff. But it makes my life easier knowing if I can order 40 copies of Superman, I can just order like 42. Sell 40, have two for the shelf for randoms.
So you don't feel that thing of, I got to make sure I'm the shop that has everything. So whoever comes in here is looking for that new trade, I've got the new trade, or I got that new hardcover.
Not anymore.
And it doesn't affect your bottom line.
No, no, people will just order it.
That's good.
If they're a regular, I'll lose the walk-in guy, but if you're a regular, just either you tell me in advance, which a couple of guys now have been using the FOC to email me back saying, hey, I want this trade. But you have to spend the effort to look at it every week and do a little work for yourself. Otherwise, I just kind of guess. If it's an ongoing series, because of my computer system, it allows me to look back and say, hey, I always order four of this and we always sell four, so stick with four. Okay. DC now is not in my system, so DC trades are going to be difficult to order. If I've gone back to spreadsheets, because DC left Diamond Comics, so they're not in my computer system anymore.
And I'm the jerk who just ordered three big books from DC from you.
But those are all from Diamond still.
Oh.
The cutoff with Diamond, I think, is end of this month. They'll start shipping everything back to DC, but for now, Diamond still carries. And what DC doesn't realize, now, for people that don't know, DC Comics left Diamond Comics.
Yeah.
Who supplies, they're the one big supplier for everything. And started their own two little sub-distributors. Or they didn't start, they pay two people to be little sub-distributors. So they're not in the, if you're like me, where I have a POS system, and everyone has a profile as a member, it's super easy to order. So I bring up your profile, I type in the book you want, I hit go. And when it comes in, bing, saying these two books came for that guy. It's beautiful. DC now is not in the system. So I have to do all this extra, 4 hours extra of legwork and stuff, and it's hurt their sales. They've been stats that they're selling less now, because most stores were like me and kind of cut back on DC stuff.
Do you think that was part of their plan, seeing the cutbacks that they did?
Maybe. Because I've heard stories of the head guy, AT&T, he doesn't like print. He wants to switch to digital. The problem with that is, as you're talking about earlier, is digital's a great shirt. Well, great, cheaper books, whatever, but you lose the collectability. So there's some people that only buy books because they like reading, but they also like the idea it's collectible. So you spend $10,000 on your comic collection, you can still sell it at some point, even if you're only selling for like, you know, $1,000. Mm-hmm. But you spend $10,000 on digital books, no one's buying that off you, you know?
And at any point, that license could be gone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's not really yours. Like, it's you know, I don't know why. It's cool for certain things. Like, they had that Black Panther free giveaway in Comixology this past week. Go for it. Amazing. But it's something to have, like, a nice bookcase of shell, like, you know.
That, and I've been battling that my whole collecting life because I've started out with just the books that I really like, the characters that I really love. I'll collect those. And then once my tastes and my knowledge of comics expand, I want to read all of Marvel and go back and read all the X-Men. I need to get those. And it doesn't stop. And now everything is getting collected, even the crap.
Yep.
You know, you'll have Marvel masterworks of everything at this point, and you're like, even that's getting this? You know, so it's one of those things where it's never ending. And it's a great thing too, because you can get, like, I'm looking at Peter David Aquaman there. Like, who thought that we would get collections of that? And there are things that people loved at one point in time. The nostalgia kicks in. But it is one of those things where I love looking at my bookshelf. Like, I go into my room every night and, like, look at my bookshelf.
It's my favorite section of the store. It's all trades.
Yeah. And again, it's the collectability. You want more.
Chris, when I move in a couple of years to a bigger location, I really want to push more trades. I like the idea. That's where I wish I had everything. Not the whole store having everything. Not ordering every hardcover. But I want to have it for most good runs of stuff that I have, like Walking Dead, almost every single part. So you come in here, I'm like, hey, yeah, we have that. And you're never getting stuck with Walking Dead trades.
Right.
I don't have the room right now to fully push that. But yeah, I'd like to have that. More of, you know, certain key trades here and there. It's like my top 50 or whatever, and have it, like, always stocked.
Nice curated.
Yes.
Yeah.
It plans. We'll be discussed one day, 3-4 years from now, and we'll see where the store is then.
Yeah, that'll be exciting. I love going into. I was just in Montreal, and there's a ton of comic book shops there. Just on that St. Catherine Street, I hit 4 by accident, and it's very interesting to go into these shops and see what it is that they specialize in.
Yep.
I guess you could say, and how it's displayed. And some shops don't. They're kind of sparse. Like, you go in and it's nice and spacious. But you see, like, okay, this is a great place for people who want to get into something good.
Yeah.
They have, like, the Umbrella Academy section. Or they have, like, the Walking Dead set. Like, nice collected ways to get into the medium. And that feeds into other parts that are now in multimedia. Like, it was done in a very clever way, I felt. So I'm always interested to see how. I mean, you've had this store for so long, so you've got the pops, you've got the toys, you've got the single issues, you've got your back issues. It's very rare to see somebody have all of those things.
You gotta pick your area.
Yeah.
You gotta kind of pick where you know, your A, B, and C. So I'll say my carry a lot of weekly new comics is probably A for me. Mm-hmm. Trades would be B, and then toys would be C. That's the three areas. I carry cards, I carry other little things, but like the big three for money are those three.
So single issues is still your biggest earner.
Yes, that's my, like.
And is that your customer, a fact of your customer base, your regulars?
Yeah, you gotta build your family. And then, and honestly, the more people that do pulls or have pre-orders, the better you can tighten up your orders. So now I have leaner bills.
Mm.
But I'm almost back to making the same amount of money I was making pre-COVID.
That's good.
But spending less, which is awesome. So, yeah. Yeah, he's been surprisingly busy. I've been talking to a couple of those stores. I talked to Gotham Central. He said he's been, like, super busy.
Yeah.
So people really want entertainment. And movies just now opened up. Whereas, what else you got? So if you can go buy some graphic novels, like, it's not a lot of pops. I don't know how pops help you through COVID, but whatever. If it helps you buying a pop, why not? But trades, when I did my sale, my COVID sale, trades is a huge, 40% off is awesome. So that's a big push. People love trades.
So how do you know how to restock your trades? Is it just what's in the computer? Is there certain things that you...
But there's a way in the computer I could program it to, like, have a restock level and a special reorder thing. Honestly, what we do now is if there's a sale, or there's a point where my orders where they list all of them, I'm like, yeah, let's restock that now. Otherwise, I wait till someone else. I have no more room. So if I wanted to restock all of Walking Dead, I might have room for Walking Dead. That's a bad example. But you can see they're pretty packed, right? So there's certain books where I'm like, even if I wanted to restock and I couldn't order in every, you know, all 26 volumes of Ultimate Spider-Man because I have no room for all 26 volumes of Ultimate Spider-Man. But if someone requests it, the golden rule I've learned, one of the golden rules, if one person wants something, someone else does. So don't order just one. Unless it's like crazy expensive. But like, so I've ordered trades in for people and only ordered one. And someone's seen it going, oh, can I buy it? I'm like, ah, I ordered that for so-and-so. So I'll always order two. Because there's always a secondary guy being like, oh, wow, I want that.
Okay.
So yeah, because I would come every week for that newest trade of whatever I was waiting to read because I'm
every
a reader.
Every Marvel trade and every DC trade I order. Not every hardcover, but every new trade, I'm in for number one.
Okay, so the number, that...
Yeah, if it doesn't sell, I'll stop carrying. Like, I stopped carrying the Dawn of X trades because they weren't selling.
Yeah, that was a very, that was an interesting... I'm not sure what they were thinking that would do. Maybe it would... It's a way to read the whole line. I wasn't into that because I didn't think the whole line would be good.
Trades later. So, like,
yeah.
You're forcing me to read one or two issues from all, you know, six X-Men books where I can just buy the individual ones I want. Because not all of them are really good.
Right.
House of Powers was dope, which we were mentioned earlier.
Right.
But that's another one that sparked a lot of people. It was a mini revolution for that one. A lot of people had bought books in a couple of years, came back into comics because of House of Powers.
So do events get you excited like that? Or when you see a writer, like, let's say, for instance, the Three Jokers, when you see something like that coming or announced, does that get you excited?
I ordered too many. I was like, oh, man, I ordered a lot. Like, I ordered on that 200 copies plus 30, like, premium copies. So, like, 230 copies. And we sold out, like, in a week. That was awesome. I could have ordered 400 probably, like... So that book did really, really well.
So what has, I guess, the pandemic taught you about people's buying habits or even just their... I know you mentioned how you order, but even just people's reaction to wanting this as a form of entertainment.
Part of it's routine also.
Right.
Well, the rest of your life may be out of whack. Right. Getting books on a Wednesday is like some kind of... Like, I felt nice coming to work after being home for 4 days with my kids and everyone trapped in the house because it's a normalcy for me. For my wife, stuck at home, every day was like, oh my God, I'm stuck at home with two kids and, you know, then eventually two dogs. But for me, it's nice to get out. And then people, Wednesday, people have this, oh, it's Wednesday, you know, it's like an event. I think it's always kind of cool. Like, you mm-hmm. know, people know, like, oh, my husband or boyfriend's going to Cyber City this day to get their stuff.
Yeah. It's a little club, actually. Yeah. And if you come at a similar time every Wednesday, you run into your little clique of people. Like, some people, you don't even know their names, yeah. But you get into conversations for an hour.
There's great customers. There's some customers, yeah, depending when you come by on a Wednesday, who know each other. I have customers who are really, really good friends from waiting for me to open up on a Wednesday talking outside.
Mm.
And they made like became like best friends.
What's the? He's a construction worker, X-Men fan. I always forget his name.
George.
We always have good conversations, yeah. And you always call him by his last name.
Ozina?
No. He's a cool guy too. The younger reader, Jewish kid.
Oh, Zeldin. So yeah.
I don't want to refer to him as that, but yeah, he's another very, very like interesting, eclectic group of people talking. Like it's nice to have that routine, that ritual, and hear what people thought about the latest episode or movie. Like you need those type of things.
Yeah, and there's a variety because even in the realm of geekdom, there's still different fans.
Mm-hmm.
So as you mentioned earlier, there's collectors of trades.
Right.
There's new comic readers, there's just collectors, and there's speculators. So guys will come in here, and one guy might not have anything to talk to you about because he's a speculator. He doesn't read comics, he just speculates and buys that. So those guys might not talk. And sometimes they'll try to, like, oh, man, you should buy this because it's hot. And I'll see them talking and be like, that guy doesn't care about your spec.
Right.
Other times you learn, you know, political stance of certain people. So there's been some discussions where people have kind of like gone to arguments Alex Zeldman, another customer, got into it, talking about, oh my God, I don't know if it was the Holocaust and Russia and like knowing how hard life is. Just like, I don't know.
I think I was here that day.
Yeah, it really, really heated. I wasn't there, but yeah. There's been other times people got into it. We're just like, you know, and I told employees, like, don't talk religion with customers. Like, you can talk, but like, if you see, if you know it's one of the these key customers are kind of heated. I got one customer's like, you know, gays are abominations. I'm just like, you can't talk to Peter. Peter's, you know, don't even get into it. My problem is I don't want to have to be like, hey, I disagree with you. What you're saying is like super, super wrong. Don't come here anymore. So I'd rather just have, just don't say that crap in my store.
There is a level where this, we can have conversation, but we also have to be respectful and make this a safe space for people.
I've had people insult Muslims, like good Muslims, a dead Muslim. I turned to him like, dude, my former employer Riza, I'm like, he's Muslim, dude. You can't say shit like that.
No.
That's not cool.
And yeah, I mean, with all of the Comicsgate crap that's going on, and a lot of people have that. I mean, they exist. Those people exist more.
It's reminding me. Something's changed in the last 25 years.
Yeah.
Females.
Talk to me about that.
Female readers. There you go. Back in the day, I had maybe like, out of all my pull customers, 1% were females. I always throw up that number. I'm trying to think of how many people I did pulls for their females. And because there's very few, it stood out. Like, oh, she collects. It's still really small now, but there's a lot more. Manga got a lot of girls into comic stores. Manga has such a diverse... American comics get stuck in majority of superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
Then you kind of get your Vertigo and other stuff in there. And the Vertigo stuff gets a lot of girls. Girls still read X-Men. Because they're very diverse and have strong female leads.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you it's hard to get them in here. Whereas with manga, you had such a variety of stuff. And stuff written by girls aimed at females. Like, you know. So you have a lot of, like, we have, like, the art styles. A lot of people, you know. But it's cool. I have a customer now that reads American comics. He's got the Death Note. It's like, you know, how is this? So I got her Death Note. She loves it. So it's kind of cool seeing someone that's only read American stuff kind of get into, like, Japanese stuff.
That's cool.
And vice versa. There's a couple, like, there's been some... I learned a lot about U.S. politics from reading a Japanese manga book called Eagle. There's a story about the first Japanese-American president, or guy running for president. And it taught me about the primaries and, like, all this. And I actually came away learning more about it than I've ever, like, seen on TV or read.
I just said that, actually, the other day to my wife, where I was saying, you know... You might think that a person is just silly because he's still reading Justice League or they're really into Star Wars. Like, well, but within those stories, as fantasy-based or whatnot, they're dealing with politics.
Yeah.
They're dealing with... Even when you read the X-Men, like I went back after House of X, I said this a couple times on the show, where I went back and read from, you know, the beginning of Claremont through all of the Extinction Agenda and all that stuff. Oops, sorry. And you start to see as the years go by and the decade change, how they cater to what's happening in the world. So like the legacy virus, I heard about people talk about it, but reading it is like, oh, this was an analogy for HIV.
Yeah.
That you kind of see now with the people who grew up reading X-Men then, why they feel how they feel about certain things today. Like comics inform that.
And comics have done that since, like, the 60s.
Right.
Spider-Man was, like... I remember reading where there's the five most influential comic characters or things... I don't know if it's comic characters or influential things like in universities, but, like, Hulk and Spider-Man came up because people could, like, find something in common with the Hulk. Leave me alone. I'm different from you. And the military's after you. And that was the very 60s, man. People are all, like, anti-war. Spider-Man with his problems. Even with the X-Men, too, right? Individually, they might kind of suck. But as a team, they're kind of awesome. It's very cool. Like, a lot of stuff. Black Panther was straight up copied from that kind of... the Black Panther movement. Like, it's cool. Well, comics reflected a lot of stuff. And always had... change, and there's a right and wrong, there's consequences. They've dealt with the Flash Green Arrow issues with Speedy being a drug addict.
Mm-hmm.
They've dealt with people becoming homosexuals, or sorry, not becoming, but like coming out.
Mm-hmm.
They've done a lot of different stuff. And so there's always some like social consciousness and morals and other stuff involved in comics that you don't get. There's your basic comics where it's like, let's have some girls, you know, with big breasts and, you know, just solid because of that.
But it again, they're all products of the era, yep. right? Like, that was the 90s.
Yep.
That sort of extreme. That
stuff still sells. It's crazy.
Because, like, guys that are my age now, that was their childhood.
Special it's just covers the house. Foils. People still love all that junk. It's, yeah. It's crazy.
It's funny how it comes back because yep. there was a time where I remember when I got back into collecting a little bit more heavily. And I was in Florida, and it was a house that they turned into a comic shop with just back issues, all for a dollar. And I said, all right, what kind of stuff should I be looking for? Like, man, anything from the 90s is worthless, pretty much. Because I found a Death of Superman in the poly bag for a buck.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, I know that this was printed millions of times and everybody bought a copy, but you still see this sometimes for $10, $20 in the store when it's not unopened. Yeah.
It's a $50 book.
It was in a dollar bin. And he's like, if it's from the 90s, it's no. And now that's kind of changing.
Yeah.
Like Deadpool, for instance, those issues where he first appeared, they weren't.
That was a $15 book. Yeah. In 98, it was like a $15 book for so long. I find my problem is people my age, it feels like the 80s was like 10 years ago.
You're still stuck in
this mentality, like, oh, the retro 80s, a little while ago. It's so far away now. When you think of it, so stuff that was like the comics, like the gritty 80s DC comics, that stuff's coming on like 40 years old.
It is, yeah.
That's crazy.
It is.
There'll be a 40-year anniversary for Watchmen, which is just crazy.
I know. You're telling me.
I'm sad about that. All those books I just mentioned were all books I did not read when they came out.
No, me neither.
Because like,
we were young.
I was 10.
Yeah.
So my first kind of, hey, here's a crazy, serious, like, next level book was Hard Boiled by Jeff Darrow and Frank Miller. And Jeff Darrow draws like he's doing a Where's Waldo book of detail. It's insane. He's the guy that designed, if people have seen The Matrix, the squid creatures were designed by Jeff Darrow.
Okay.
Or Darrow. I think it's Darrow. D-A-R-R-O-W. Darrow? Anyways. That book was crazy. Like, it was three or four issues. They eventually just put in a trade. The scenes where, like, there's a guy who's an insurance collector and he's going after someone's chasing him, or he's chasing after someone, there's robots and kind of Terminator-esque, this crazy mm-hmm. future. But the detail in the comics, amazing. It's a Where's Waldo book just taken up a notch. And there's one where a car crashes through a mall, and the bottom corner of the panel, this is the part as I came like, what the hell? Was a fenced off area with barbed wire and people having sex while people in masks walk around with chainsaws cut them up. And people outside watching. And it's just a small panel in a 2-page spread. Just that. And just every little thing had stuff. Like, the book was crazy.
So it was like that payoff of paying attention to the whole.
Yeah, I've never seen that as a kid. I saw it at the Great Regent in Square One. I was like, what the hell? This book is crazy. And yeah, but we weren't allowed to buy it because it was like, you had to be a little older for it because of those scenes.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that book is, the detail is amazing. But that was one of the first books that kind of, it's like, wow. It's a book I felt super sad about as a kid. There's certain books, the it's like video games, books, movies. When you're younger, it's cool to watch or get involved and be like, oh man, like, I wish I was an X-Men. You know, I do this. It's not there anymore. Like, when you're my age, I don't wish I was an X-Men. Unless it was somehow you could make me money quickly. You know what I'm saying? But as a kid, there's your imagination, getting into that world and how you see books and stuff and even video games. You're just become engrossed.
Right.
I rarely have that moment of like wow, that I did as a kid. So there's this Justice League issue. It starts off with a Green Arrow on a tape recorder. This is an 80s book. Talking to the Justice League. He goes through this whole thing of stuff that went down. At the end of the issue, he cries and he quits the Justice League and then walks out. I never had the second issue. So this day, I never knew, like, why did he quit? Why was he so sad? And, like, it bothered me as a kid. I'm like, he's just a man. And, yeah, so I don't get those emotions when I read comics now. But back in the day, it was kind of cool that, like, and I actually found that book years later. I was like, oh, my God, it's that book.
It's true. Like, the people who grew up as kids reading comics remember a time of reading one part of a story and maybe catching another part, and they fill in the rest in their imagination, yeah. And they're perfectly fine with that. I remember the first time where continuity really hit me, realizing what, you know, the word meant and how the universe of DC functioned was when I remember a random Adventures of Superman where Superman basically saves or tries to save the a version of the Fantastic Four. They crash and they all get somewhat of those powers, but they all end up dying. And the captain of that ship was named Hank Henshaw. And then when I read the Return of Superman, and then the cyborg Superman reveals himself and says, "I'm Hank Henshaw."
Yeah.
And I was like, I think I remember that. So yeah. I go into my pile of ragged comics. Ooh. I pull it out, and you're just like, oh my goodness, it all matters. It all counts. Like it had that moment of, this is so much bigger than just this one issue of pictures.
Yeah.
It brings back that kid in you. It's true. But that's changed now because the stories are so decompressed, and you get, you know, a 6-issue trade, which is the amount of story you would have gotten in one issue, it feels like, as a kid. Like when you read those Marvel Epic collections and you're like, man, there's so much story packed in 20 issues. It's incredible.
I was excited by Mutant Massacre back in the day.
So good.
I read X-Men and they had some awesome covers, that 210, 211, 212, 213.
Mm-hmm.
Covers are dope. And in the back, they showed you how it tied in.
Right.
And it would tie into like one issue of Power Pack, one issue of Daredevil, one issue of...
I think Thor was in it. Yeah.
It was amazing. And it's the tie-over. So you had one where it would show you a scene like that's the noise you heard in this issue. And it was awesome. I was very excited about that storyline as a kid. Trying to track down the different issues because I didn't have the local comic shop.
The hunt. The hunt is always part of the fun.
Yes.
So you mentioned women now having more female customers than when you started. When you started, I probably am a testament to that. Do you feel that your customers and the readership have grown with the store? Like guys who were 14, like I was, how do you get kids? Do you still find kids?
Parents. You have people that were comic fans.
Yeah.
Either got it or stayed in and then got their kids in. But it's tough, man, because I have a couple customers that have like multiple kids and not. Depends on what your choice is as a parent. Do you make your kid like things you like?
Right.
Or let them find their own way.
Right.
So I have one cousin with two kids, and one kid does not care about comics. The other's like into it. And the kid's in his like late 20s now.
Okay.
I've seen him grow up from being a little kid.
Mm-hmm.
And his dad will buy books. He's like, oh, he keeps on taking them from my house to read, not returning them in time. So it's funny how they kind of bicker with their books. But they're both into it. But for other people, kids don't care. You know, there's so many other things out there. You know, video games. Like, my kid loves Minecraft. My daughter's more into comics than my son.
So when considering that now, because like we were just talking about, we could pick a comic off the rack, and it was that entertainment that you could go back to and flip through and trade with your friends. Whereas now, it may seem harder for a new reader or kid to jump into Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Where you've got Dogman or Raina Telgemeier books.
That's the biggest selling graphic novel, eh?
That's what I mean.
You're like number one. It'd be everything.
Yeah.
Dogman's insane. I never realized how powerful Dogman is, which is funny that the newest issue comes out this week, and I'm taking one home for my daughter.
Right.
But yeah, it dwarfs any comic book trade that comes out. It sells that many copies.
It's so crazy. How do you make sure that you've got that, like, do you have your section at the front of the store, the first thing you see is that kids section, but do you ever feel like maybe I've got to expand that section?
More new store.
New store.
Yeah, I want to really up my game and kind of build more of a kids' corner and have something where it's like a good chunk of stuff. Because you can still get all that stuff if you go to Indigo. They have a good kids' section.
Right.
I won't try to go Indigo because Indigo does a lot of like, same with Mastermind. They got a good kids' selection. Stick more comic-y for me. Whereas for them, they'll start doing like the Stilton books, the Investigating Rats. Mm-hmm. They're kind of comic booky / novels, those ones. They hear a lot of that.
Right.
Either way, there's a bunch of stuff I like, and it's good to point kids. Like, I love getting kids to read Bone. Bone's awesome.
Right.
Like, depending on the age of the kid, I'm like, yo, have your kid read Bone. It's a fantastic. It's gonna be a Netflix series soon.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. I've never read Bone.
Bone's amazing.
I hear it's so good.
There's one big collection, but there should be I think there's a color omni you should get. It's awesome. The Bone is like really well done. Like I wish I was younger. Like I'm looking forward to my son reading it when he's 10.
Mm-hmm.
It's a serious tone to it, but it's like really cool because it's a thing happened in the past where people die and the throne and these creatures from the land they don't explain, the bones and just like these rat creatures, and there's some humor to it. And, like,
there's an investment in that experience of, yes, finding a character that you can follow and the story continues.
So, like, a few books I laughed out loud reading.
Oh, that's
one
cool.
One issue, there's a panel I started, like, I started cracking up.
That's cool.
And that's rare.
Are you missing cons this year?
Yes.
How much of a hit is it for a store like yours?
Pretty big.
Yeah.
I have eight tables at Fan Expo, but I've heard of some stores raking in like tens upon tens of thousands of dollars. Like those shirt guys. The shirt guys must clear like $100,000 on that weekend.
Really?
Yeah. The shirt guys kill it. I always wish at a con, when you walk around, it could be like when you're in a movie. So you know when you watch a movie and they give you like quick stats over people? I would love to see a con total for sales. What individual items sold the best? Like Baby Yoda Pops sold, you know, 7,000 of the con. What genre sold the best?
Mm.
And what store did the best? And how much was stolen? Mm. I'd love to see the stats say, you know, these are the total sales for the entire con. Because you'll never know, no one ever's going to fess up to that. You can find total people to show up, but it'd be kind of cool to be like, yo, like, people spent $200,000 over the course of 4 days. And the biggest seller were Baby Yoda Pop Toy, and discounted graphic novels, and then back issues, then this, then that.
Yeah. Hopefully they come back. I miss it.
Yeah, it's tough. COVID's going to change a lot, man. Like, whoever knows if cons will ever get back to how cons were supposed to be. But then how do you social distance a con?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's tough. Like, and as a dealer, if I have to pay less for my booth because they're allowing less people in, so I should have to pay less for my booth if they're allowing less people in.
Right.
So I don't know.
And then even getting people to go to, like, part
how
of what
people
gets...
How do work behind the booth? Like, when you're all tight together. Like, man, it's going to suck, man. Like... My next con is Anime North in May. Because they canceled, Fan Expo canceled their November con they wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, I think everyone was hopeful. But so you would do Toronto?
Two cons a year. I do Fan Expo
and Toronto
in August, and I do, March break. I don't do that one anymore.
Okay.
I have kids that like me still. So one day when my kids don't give a crap about daddy. Sorry. When they don't care about daddy and they do their own March break thing, then I'll probably start doing that con again.
Okay.
That con wasn't very good. It's tough, man. Like, I find cons for me is go all in.
Right.
And just, like make it good, or go one table.
Okay.
In between's not worth it. It's too much money invested. Like, I did they had a really cool con years ago. That's probably one of my favorite cons. And it was a hobby show. I did it 2 years in a row. And the first year, I had a big... How much space did I have? 16. I think I had 32 feet length. Was, 4 8-foot tables worth of space. And then it was 10 feet deep. But I designed this booth where I drew out the schematic. I do this for every con. I do schematics for how my booth's going to look, where I'm going to put shelving, and I have a general idea of spacing. But for this con, I sat down and did the math so perfectly, how people would walk, that it was my best design booth I've ever built. And the con stunk. But what the hobby con was is, take all these hobbies, it was at the International Center on Airport Road.
Okay.
And have it where there is a bunch of RC car dealers, there's a magic dealer, there's just one or two hobbies of every hobby, and that's it. So I was the only comic store. I just didn't have a lot of traffic, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But it was cool, like, an RC area, an area for people flying helicopters.
That's still cool,
like,
though.
I thought it was awesome. Second year I did it, I went down to a much smaller booth. I gained very well designed, like, to the square footage. So not a lot of people went. It was unfortunate. I thought it was a really cool con. Yeah. I would have brought my kids to that con, but
I would have probably went, because I think when you're into one hobby, usually other ones appeal to you in some way, right? So we all appreciate
they have
that.
RC tanks.
That's cool.
That shoot BBs. Dude, I so almost bought one years ago. Couldn't justify having it, but yeah, you could pull this like 1 foot tank that would fire BBs at you. Like, it's insane.
Imagine that in your neighborhood.
Dude, well, here's the funny thing with hobbies, though, right? So if you go to Comic Con now.
Mm.
you still have subgroups of geeks. There's, we broke down comics. So comics has its own little branch.
Right.
Or branches. Then you have anime fans. You have horror fans, sci-fi fans. And sci-fi is another one, right?
Right.
Is a Star Trek fan the same as a Star Wars fan? Maybe not. Maybe. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Your Doctor Who people.
Yeah.
You know, all kind of branch. And even with comics, then, you have superheroes and collectors. Then there's Marvel, DC.
Right, right, right.
You have your subgroups. So there's one year these guys were lined up to get an autograph from John Romita Jr., these two guys walked by like, look at these losers. These two guys were wearing or carrying Guitar Hero guitars on their back. And I was like, so in my head, I'm like, you're carrying fake guitars and you're calling them losers? But every hobby looks at another hobby. Like, my buddies are being RC cars. Had these gas-powered cars and we go to like indoor tracks. And it's like really serious into it. I was like, wow, it's a whole new little world.
It's crazy.
So people come in here and sometimes to them it's like, I've never been in a comic store before. So it's kind of cool being their first comic store. It's also cool being their second or third if they've seen a couple bad stores. Because they come in going, oh, wow. But yeah, it's cool having a, you know, when I do wine and cheese every year, I've had a couple of times where that person visits their first time ever in a comic store. I have to explain to them that normally we don't wear suits and ties all the time. They just picked a really good day.
Right, right.
For our once in a year event to pick to come by.
You dress for your doctors and your lawyers.
Yeah, I know.
So I got two more questions for you before we wrap this up. If you were, you're kind of like a comic book sommelier, if you will. You were able to pair what maybe a person's interests are with the book to read. So if I were to say to you, I like Wu-Tang Clan. The television show I like is Sons of Anarchy. And my favorite book is, I don't know, Ender's Game, top of my head. What would you recommend to me to read? Because those are random things.
Yes. Say Vertigo, first of all.
Okay.
100 Bullets.
Okay.
100 Bullets, it's got the gangster part.
Uh-huh.
It's got a cool variety of, like, different people. So Wu-Tang Clan, kind of, like...
Uh-huh.
In the realm of comics, you have good superhero stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine. My problem with being comics for so long is stuff gets stale. They tread water, you know? The Fantastic Four's kids will never grow up.
Right. It's like water. A soap opera.
Yeah. You know, X-Men will always be hated by humanity. And even if they went to a world where everyone loved them, eventually we'll hate them again.
We have X-Men to.
Aren't exactly.
Yeah.
So Batman will always be, you know, that age. It'd be cool if they get ages. But that's why I prefer stuff like Image and Vertigo now. Well, Vertigo's now gone with Black Label, but it's high Vertigo. It had stuff where it ended. It was like a start and finish, you know? So it was easier to pick stuff for people to read where I'm like, all right, you like this? Science fiction, Ender's Game would be tough, though. Have you read Ender's Game?
I have.
Amazing, eh?
It's really good.
Too bad he's an interesting person. But Ender's Game is one of the few books I've actually read like 3 times.
Yeah, me too.
I don't reread novels, but like... so good.
Well, I mean, as interesting and controversial as a person he is in his personal life, his stories, that book is great.
Out the internet like well before the internet existed.
That's what I mean. Like,
when you discuss the forums with the brother, kind of like does the political back and forth, the chat rooms now, like who could have seen how? Yeah, Ender's Game is amazing. Anyone hasn't read Ender's Game, please read it.
It's a great series of books. Really is.
So yeah, Thunderbolts came around right away. Oh, I'm trying to think of something science fiction-y. That's harder. I think there's very few really awesome science fiction comics that I can think of. Humanoids? Not humanoids. Metal. Oh, Metabarons. There you go. Metabarons. It's the European series.
Okay.
And it started where the like... oh, it's a clan of guys and... I don't know if he meets a royal family. Anyways, they have this ability where this rock has these crazy levitation powers, and they expand from being a backwards planet to being like this powerful nation/world, you know, empire. But this trend starts where I have a kid, and I think the first guy's kid is deformed in some way. And he's like, you have a year to go, and you're going to come back and kill me to take the throne of the Metabaron. And it becomes a tradition that the Metabaron's son at some point has to get, when he's born, have something like ruined. So one guy like takes his kid's legs away and gets metal legs. And so they get scarred in some way and have to come back and fight their dad, all while this other cool stuff's going down. Mm-hmm. And it's written by the... Oh, the guy's really, really well known for science fiction coming out of Europe. Jarowski? I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but when you hear of, like, certain European writers, he's, like, from heavy metal, that kind of stuff, but this guy is really well known for, like, science fiction stuff. And the art's phenomenal.
Meta Barons.
Okay. Yeah. It's the same universe that... Oh, it's coming from Mobius's series is from. Shoot. Drawing a blank. I have a story here. Meta Barons in the same universe as another series.
Not 2000 AD.
No. 2000 AD, no. What was it? Either way, I feel really dumb when I do realize it later. But there's a famous book that came out that Mobius had done. I think that was the first from this world. And then two other people have done side ones, like relating to it. And then... And,
You can take it, you can take it.
That's fine. Okay. They had, I lost track where it was now. Sorry, dude.
No, that's okay. Meta Barons. You're talking Meta Barons. Yeah. And the universe that Mobius had.
Yeah. Incal. There we go.
It's
called Incal.
There you go.
So the Incal is the same universe as Meta Barons. They kind of share the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But Meta Barons came after. But yeah, it's brilliant. It's a really, really cool science fiction. I was going to compare it to Dune slightly, but yeah.
Okay.
Speaking of, have you seen the Dune pictures?
I have, but I haven't read the book, so I'm going into that completely excited.
It's very cool.
With like no expectation.
I read the book like way back, high school level. Like,
I got it. Yeah, it's one of those I got to read.
Fun. I hope people haven't seen the original Dune movie done by David Lynch. You know when you read something, especially novels, you envision how people look when you read the novel. And then when you see a movie, and that's why I feel all wrong with casting, is you're like, I'm like, hey. That's like nothing how I envisioned it in my head.
Yeah.
Dune book, Dune movie from the 80s? Totally that. I was like, oh, what the hell? Like, how is that like that? Dune's awesome, man. A lot of stuff in Dune is really, I'm excited, man. I think that.
It looks good.
The Canadian guy's going to do an awesome job with it.
Yeah, it looks good. That's an exciting trailer. So you say the next 4 years, you plan, next 3 to 4 years, you plan on moving the store.
Yes, my lease is up, and I want to go to a less cool mall, but get a bigger location. And then this will be my first, second, third, fourth, fifth location, technically, if you count all my incarnations.
Okay.
Of how I want to set it up and, like, do it properly.
So what's your vision? You have your mathematical setup
for... I'm looking for, like, 3,000 to 4,000 square feet. Now I'm at 1,000 at my store. I want to get rid of my warehouse and my store and make it one.
Okay.
So the combined total right now is 2,300 square feet. So I want to at least go to 3 to, like, if not 4. 1,000 square foot back room, then kind of have, you know, I'm going to copy the snail. I want to do back issue drawers.
Yeah.
I want to increase my trades. So I envision it looking like you're going to an Indigo meets Old Navy. I like the idea of the open, like, concrete, unfinished shelving kind of style of Old Navy, but I love the tables and kind of corners and nooks of themed stuff that Indigo has.
And then you can, if you were into it, even host an event.
So, yeah, my plan for this is, I don't know, how it will be happen, but I want to do a design on the floor of comic covers and kind of throw it on epoxy and have that kind of be like a collage you walk on.
That's cool.
Everything will be on that. And then big industrial shelving with stuff going up and just kind of have it. But the Indigo table idea is where we can have an event, but all the tables move because they're on wheels. Like, I have a vision. So once I find what it is and start making the ball rolling, like, that will be my... If I go off the beaten path, so not on a major street like Steeles, kind of a little more like some stores a little harder to find, some guy up in Woodbridge is kind of the industrial area, so you have a really good look. So if I do that, though, I want to make it where the store is so cool you want to spend the extra time to find it.
Right.
That's the payoff.
Right.
Make it be awesome when you're there. To be like, you know what? It was worth it spending, you know, a little extra time on the bus. Still relative to this neighborhood. This is to my hood, so I don't want to go too far, but yeah.
And you got a solid customer base, yes. And they, like, this is home for a lot of people. Yeah, don't go too far.
No. Gotta go. But, yeah. When it does happen, we'll I'll have you in for a podcast from the new location. But it's exciting. It's exciting and scary because, like, it's a lot of work to move. Moving's going to suck. But it's kind of fun to be able to set up a store like
the way you want it.
Yes, from the get-go. Because everything in the store is piecemeal. It's like this got came from the old store. This got built. And that got built. And then that got added slowly. So over the years, I've added pieces. Kind of like a home, though. Picture moving to a house and you haven't fully furnished it.
Yeah.
Unless you have a lot of money, you're not buying new everything in one shot.
Right.
When I move to this new place, my goal is to kind of get it all done. New in one shot.
And that'll be the home.
Yes. Everything's new at a certain point, as opposed to having to replace this for that, that for this.
Yeah. I'm excited.
Somewhat. That'll be cool.
Well, happy 25 years.
Thank you, yeah.
I'm really happy you made it through the pandemic and seem to be doing well, all things considered. Many more years of success, and I'm looking forward to the new store.
Thank you, man. Yeah.
And we'll have a little podcast station
Definitely,
there.
Definitely, yeah.
That sounds
It'll
good.
Amazing.
All right, Daryl. Thank you so much.
Thanks
and I'll probably see you tomorrow. All right. All right.